You can find more information, photos, and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes that we talk about in this podcast by heading to the links in the show notes or on our website at sarahoven.com.
Welcome to Grow, Cook, Eat, Arrange, the podcast of me, Sarah Raven, and Arthur Parkinson. But today, because we're going to do a food-orientated one, Arthur's not actually with me, and I've got the most exciting guest who I just am longing to talk to, but also longing for you to know all about her, if you don't already. Who I'm talking to today is the nutritionist Amelia Freer. And I came across her first book, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago when I was writing the Good Good Food book. And to be honest, there were a lot of books in that sort of ilk at that moment. And in a funny way, I couldn't quite cope with them because I was doing one myself. And what I felt is I had to just sort of concentrate. And so I'm ashamed to say, actually, that I hadn't properly read any of her books until she visited us at Perch Hill about 6 weeks ago, and I've then been reading her books ever since, and I'm completely and utterly obsessed with them. So good morning, Amelia, and it's just so, so lovely to have you here. And everyone by the end of this will realise and will be, I'm sure, feeling the same as I do, which is just a sort of really a greater understanding about nutrition without it being intimidating and feel like a kind of rather earnest, worthy science. And that's what I feel you have really done for this. And it, for me, that's just so exciting. So hello, hello, hello.
Hello, good morning. Thank you so much for saying all of those wonderful things. That's absolutely what I aim to achieve with my work, because I quite agree with you. Nutrition can often become very off-putting because of its complexity. It alienates people. It feels very worthy and very shaming. We know that there's a lot of emotional depth or a lot of emotions full stop when it comes to talking about food. So it is a very complex area for one to navigate. But I always just want to, I mean, I haven't always got it right, but my aim has always just been to make it as positive and as joyful as possible. Because I think when one feels the benefits of eating well, you can't really argue with that. It's different for everyone, but you can't really argue with how important it is.
And just because I suppose some people might think, well, why is Sarah on a gardening podcast talking to somebody about nutrition? Well, it's kind of obvious, but also it's obvious because a huge amount of what you recommend are things that ideally one can grow oneself. And if not, hopefully one will buy organic, but I'm sure we're going to come on to that. But the importance of veg is so fundamental to each of your books that I've read. And I mean, I've got in front of me now, Nourish and Glow, the 10-day plan, which I really want to talk a lot about because I've found it really, really exciting. So we'll talk about a lot of that. But also I've got Simply, which is your most recent cookbook, I think. Anyway, we'll come on to that as well. But the recipes are based in 70% veg, something like that. I mean, or, you know, certainly more than half. And that's why I'm justifying everybody that I'm talking to, even if as a gardener you think, well, what's this got to do with me? I promise you it has. Amelia, will you first of all tell us a little bit about your background and your history and kind of what you do? And then I want to come on to talking about Nourish and Glow particularly.
Yes, of course. Thank you. So I grew up in Northumberland in the countryside. I had a mother who did cook, you know, one or two meals from scratch. She did grow her own vegetables, but I absolutely had no interest in food or cooking or growing. I was really someone that sort of wanted the fast food life. Cut forward to moving to London in my early 20s, and I really took advantage of all of the fast food on offer. And I thought it was terribly sophisticated to have croissants and bagels and baguettes and, you know, the kind of food that I suppose I didn't have access to growing up. And like I say, I had no connection with how this was making me feel, but I did have a lot of health issues. I was not, you know, a very vibrant young 20-year-old girl. I had terrible digestive issues. I had chronic acne. I was really fatigued. So it wasn't anything serious or scary like any nasty diseases, but I just wasn't thriving. And it got to the point that I went to lots of different doctors and was just trying to sort of get to the root cause of why I had this chronic tummy pain all the time and, you know, et cetera, all sorts of little things. And I didn't really get anywhere. I wasn't really enlightened with what was going wrong with me, and taking antidepressants and pain relief wasn't really an option for me. At the time, I had a flatmate whose brother had been quite unwell, and he'd made great improvements with his health through addressing his nutrition. And she said to me, "You might want to just take a look at what you're eating." Now, at the time, I'd say that my diet was pretty much beige, and I don't think I got any fiber. And I think it was, you know, I was drinking sort of 12 cups of tea with sugar in and thriving on sort of toast. And, you know, that was pretty much it.
What were you doing for a job then?
I was actually Prince Charles's PA. No. So I worked at St. James's. I worked at St. James's Palace. I had a very exciting and busy job. But, you know, I grabbed a sandwich and I didn't really think much more than that. Now, you know, that's fine for some people, but it turns out it just wasn't for me. When this flatmate suggested that I address my nutrition, I was quite put out and quite offended and a little bit defensive, which a lot of people are when we talk about nutrition. But I was also quite desperate. And so, long story short, I went to see a nutritionist, and she was just so, it was so enlightening. It was the most amazing hour of my 20s, because she didn't tell me that I had to give up everything that I loved. She just told me how much I was lacking. And it was so genius. And I came away excited, and I came away thinking, I need to add some vegetables into my life. And I need to, and, you know, it wasn't about focusing on giving up this and giving up that. It was just about slowly, subtly replacing those things and getting a bit more of a balance. And, you know, for me, that was a light bulb moment, and it completely changed my life. I was sort of coming to the end of my wonderful working period with the Prince of Wales, and I decided that I wanted to go and study this for myself so that I could understand it in more depth. And it was very self-motivated for me. But by the end of the four-year course, my health was absolutely thriving. And I just thought, gosh, I wonder if I could actually help other people with this. And that was how my practice began. I'm not actually, just to correct you, I mean, it's, people always say, use the word nutritionist. My training is actually nutritional therapy. So I was really given extensive training on working one-on-one with individuals and in a much more sort of therapeutic setting, which is something that I've really, really enjoyed. And it's probably the bit of my career that I still love the most, is helping each unique individual in front of me pick apart their complex health and work out what's the right way for them to move forwards and how they can improve it through food.
Well, that's well, I really want to come and see you, but anyway, that's just my
that would be a pleasure.
The thing that I found so helpful about both your books, really, you know, and I'm someone who has been on a lot of diets, and I have always struggled with my weight a bit. And I've definitely, I would say, if I'm honest, would put myself in using food, not just for nutrition. So for comfort, definitely, I would say, and structuring my life around it a little bit. But I've always loved veg. So, you know, that's the one thing that I was going to say to you is, if one doesn't want to eat quite so much fruit, can you replace it with more veg? But anyway, we'll perhaps come on to that. But no, the thing that I found utterly, utterly genius is the, in a way, now I know it, obvious simplicity of your positive nutrition pyramid. And I don't know if you invented it. I mean, I know it's all kind of out there, the information, but I found that myself as somebody, I consider myself to be quite a healthy eater. But the thing of having this pyramid with the numbers of glasses of water along the bottom, which is 8 in a day, and then above that, the 6 portions of vegetables, and then above that, the 3 of fruit, etc. And you go up to the pinnacle of the pyramid, which is with your nuts and seeds at the top. For me, that simplicity and that graphic simplicity is utterly genius. And literally, I found myself going to our colour photocopier in the office and colour photocopying 10 days so that I can then tick off, because there's that real sense of, yes, I've done it today, you know, or when you're heading towards supper, okay, I haven't done it, you know, quite right. I haven't got the balance quite right. So I'm going to slightly change what I might have had for supper. And also that if you fail a little bit, then try and get it a little bit better the next day or the day after. And compared to lots of the regimes that I've tried, I've really loved it and found it incredibly satisfying and easy to do and really positive, actually.
Oh, I'm so pleased. I mean, that's exactly, you know, we called it the positive nutrition pyramid because we wanted it to be, as you say, a sort of pleasurable and enlightening and positive experience. It's not about making you feel like, oh, I haven't done it right today, therefore I'm no good, therefore I can't do this diet, therefore I'll comfort eat, which I think many of us know these patterns. I must give credit. I've got a wonderful work wife and business partner, Rosie Yoxall, who trained in medicine and then went on to train in nutrition. And it was her who came up with this pyramid. She just said, you know, I just kind of want to be able to remember each day what I'm eating and help me keep track. So, you know, you've got it, Sarah. You've completely understood how easy this pyramid is to use. And I think it's just so helpful because it gives you that visual tool. And as you say, it's not about getting to the end of the day and realizing that you haven't got it right and going, oh, no, I need to eat all 12 portions of everything now. It's that little guidance that, okay, next day, you know, now I know what I'm doing wrong. And now I know that I need to focus on fruit or water. And I suppose, what, you know, I mean, Rosie and I are sort of, we've worked together for years and we read each other's brains and we both know how hard nutrition can be because we experience that firsthand as well. You know, we're both normal, you know, busy working mums, etc. And we always just think, how can we make this simple? How can we make this achievable? How can we make this, make people feel better about themselves trying to do this rather than embark on a period of deprivation, which we, you know, we know too well. And we just know that that doesn't really work. Yeah. So I think this is a much more joyful way. And I just love that you photocopied the pyramid and that you're using it. I mean, now I just draw it on the back of an envelope. I know it off by heart. And whenever I'm feeling like I'm just going off track, which can happen when we're busy, I just kind of quickly draw it and think, okay, right, you have not been eating enough of this or not been eating enough of that. And it's just that lovely reminder. And I think it's different to the sort of traditional pyramids or plates that we've seen, in that this gives you an idea of what a whole day can look like. Yeah. Because we know it's what we do consistently that has the biggest impact on our health, not, you know, are we having a perfect day or a perfect 2 weeks? And so I like that the pyramid, you can sort of slowly build it up and look over the course of a month. It's not about every single day being absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
It's just about over a month, hey, I've managed to eat way more vegetables than I probably would have. And, you know, it's that that's going to impact our health.
Yes. I mean, I do think the importance of water is something that you stress. And again, I mean, so many people, I have a lovely business partner too. And she always says to me, Sarah, you don't drink enough water. It's true. You know, they all sit in our meetings and they all have a huge tumbler of water and I never do, but I will now. And the thing that I found really helpful is having a glass of water half an hour before you eat. So I might go down and start cooking now, preparing a meal, often a salad, so not cooking, but then I'll put it aside and then I'll go out to the tunnel and do some watering for half an hour, having had a glass of water. And I do think it sort of helps calm and sort of center you. And also, of course, it does help repress those really sort of strong hunger pangs. And I found that unbelievably helpful. I really have, as well as the pyramid thing. And the other thing that I found really interesting in the first section of the 10-day plan, I mean, the Nourish and Glow book, before the recipes and everything, is this idea that you really want to think of this almost like kind of spoiling yourself. So cut out 4 hours before you start. Don't kind of rush, you know, sort of clash into doing it. Really get your head right and maybe just introduce one level 1 week if it's all feels too overwhelming. And just, you know, that it's a sort of gradual getting better forever. And I am one of those sort of like waking up on Monday morning, right, crash diet today, you know, or fast today. And then by Thursday, someone comes around for supper and I'm bored of it. And, you know, and it just is not sustainable.
I mean, we humans, we're programmed for pleasure. So if we remove pleasure from our life, we're pretty much guaranteed to not stick with it. So if you know that depriving yourself makes you be bored by Thursday, and I'm totally with you, I'm exactly the same. I need to have those aspects of pleasure in my life. And that's why I always focus on making, you know, healthy eating joyful and take away this idea that it's about starvation and about not having any fun. Because I think that that's been, you know, that hasn't really worked for anyone, and it doesn't have to be that way. So I think, you know, food can still be delicious as well as nutritious. And we've got to get that, you know, that dichotomy between never missing out on the absolute social and emotional joys and pleasure that food brings us when we share meals with loved ones, but also understanding that we can't ignore the nutrition as well. And it is possible to merge the two, I believe.
Yeah.
I wanted to just quickly go back because you mentioned that the bottom of the pyramid has the hydration. There isn't really any evidence. I should just be very clear. There isn't really any evidence of how much water we should all drink. I think as individuals, we are all unique. So the pyramid is very much a guide. And I, you know, talk through it in detail in the book, that each person can adapt it towards their own needs. It's not saying whether you need to be vegan or carnivore, or, you know, some people might need less water, some people might need more carbohydrates or bigger portions, some people might need less. It just, you know, we are all so unique. So it is a little bit of a case of using it, but also feeling empowered enough to adapt it according to your own needs. I had to put the hydration in because we work with so many clients and we see that most people think that they're hungry when in fact they're just really hydrated, and it can really help with head fog, digestion, you name it. So it's an obvious one to include to just remind people to check their hydration levels.
That's what I was going to come on to actually, is before we start talking about actual food and recipes, which we will in a minute. But the other thing that I found really interesting is just taking time to think about why you think you're hungry, and that actually understanding your own body and thinking, okay, at breakfast, right, I'm hungry. Okay, it's 1 o'clock now, I'm hungry. Okay, it's 7 o'clock now or 7:30, I'm hungry. Actually, quite often what I've found since I've read it is that I'm not hungry at those times particularly. Mm. And just because either there's a trigger or it's just your life structure. That is a life structure, not your body saying it needs food at that time. And I found that really liberating, and that sometimes just having 2 glasses of water, I'm rather an all or nothing person. So when you tell me to have 1 glass of water, I'll always have 2.
Well, we're all unique. That's what's so wonderful about us all. It's the thing that I enjoy the most working with clients. I'm really glad that you touched on that, because there is a huge amount of the book that Rosie and I focused on the emotional complexities and triggers that I think often get ignored. And a lot of people, you know, very similar to you, embark on wanting to eat healthier. We know the reasons why. Most people know what to do. But what they don't actually notice is their habits, their unconscious habits around when they feel that they're hungry or not hungry. And so I often say with clients, well, there's lots of little tips, but it's a good few questions to run through before a meal, or if you find that you're someone who overeats or uses food as a source of comfort, is first of all, there's a very big difference between actual hunger and not being full. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of us have become so used to feeling full all of the time because, you know, these days we're very privileged, we've got access to food, a lot more food than we actually need. And so sometimes it's just this strange feeling of not being full, and we mistake that for hunger. Whereas, as you know, in the book, there's a sort of chart of the different levels of hungers. And really, we should be able to go for 5 hours without having any food. That's what I tend to do. Have breakfast, fast for 5 hours, have lunch, fast for 5 hours, have your evening meal, fast overnight. And to me, that's a very simple little, you know, equation to do. And it's straightforward. You might have, if you're used to eating all the time, which a lot of people unconsciously do, you sometimes have to build up to those 5 hours, but it's a good thing to sort of work towards. But then there's a big difference between head hunger, mouth hunger, and genuine stomach hunger. So often I'll find if I'm anxious or worried about something, I will tell myself I'm hungry, and I can go to the fridge and be sort of thinking, oh, why am I so hungry? Actually, I'm trying to avoid a very uncomfortable state of anxiety or nerves or something that I'm not feeling good about. And food can temporarily do that for us. Obviously, we know it's not a long-term solution. Mouth hunger can just be when you just need to change that taste in your mouth. Maybe you've been talking all morning and your mouth's gone a bit dry, or you've had that old coffee taste or something, and you just actually are trying to change the flavors. And again, that's something we can mistake for genuine hunger. Whereas genuine hunger should be a good 5 hours after your last meal, and when your tummy is properly rumbling and feels empty, and you know that you need that refuel. So it's quite useful to actually take a little moment, as you've said you've been doing, to just connect with yourself and work out what kind of hunger is this.
Yeah, it's so true. And I'm very glad you brought up fasting, because that's one of the things that is so sort of around at the moment, isn't it? And, you know, whether some people are recommending that you eat dinner at sort of 5 or 6 and then you try and push breakfast as late in the day as possible, or, you know, you're doing 5-2 perhaps, and so you have 2 days of really quite little and then 5 of normal. I mean, what are you feeling about those trends?
I'll just firstly say there's a lot of science towards fasting, so that, you know, it's out there, and I'm not going to challenge whether it's good or not. What I will challenge is anything that anyone does, if it feels stressful to them or hard or deprivational, is not healthy for them.
Yeah.
So again, we're all unique individuals. If someone who doesn't really love food and exercises a lot and has loads of, you know, really abundant health, and they find that they can get through on just 2 meals a day, then, you know, and if that works for them, then fine. But it doesn't work for the majority of us. And the clients that I've worked with tend to find it incredibly stressful, and it makes them feel guilty or ashamed that they can't make this their way of life. And why can't I do it when it's so good for me? And you hear that some celebrity lost all of this weight or blah, blah, blah. You know, so I don't find that a part of the health picture. You know, finding a way that works for us in our day-to-day lives is much, much more important and much, much healthier. We also have to remember that from a nutritional point of view, we need lots of fiber. We need to have a variety of nutrients. We need to be eating quite a lot of food in order to actually get all of the things that we need. So if you're reducing your meals, you actually have to eat a large amount of food at the times that you do eat in order to actually get what we need. So this constant focus on deprivation and cutting back always seems to miss the actual point that we need food. We need a variety of fibers and phytonutrients and vitamins and minerals in order for us to thrive. We can't get those if we're not eating.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Right. Well, let's get on to eating. So I'm actually moving on to your next recent book, which is Simply Good for You, which is a cookbook. And again, I'm sorry to be so idolatry and so sort of applauding you in everything that you do. But I found this book also so light and easy on its feet and so unchefy, so kind of home cook. And I kind of wanted to make everything, because it's not necessarily like your friends are coming around for dinner, whatever. I mean, there are some things for that, but it's like really tasty, flavor packed, incredibly easy, good ideas. And, you know, I just ended up, I actually was on the bus for an hour last night going through London, and I ended up just sort of turning down so many pages and marking so many things. And I think one of the reasons I loved it so much when I made myself sort of put it down and think about it is it's very sort of somebody who's got a busy life and yet they want to eat well. And so there are lots of things like batch cooking, like your pea and chicken burgers, and that you say, you know, make twice as much or even more and then freeze them. And then one of the things I've tried to do is have nice Tupperware with nice labels so that it's not joining the sort of schmush and chaos in the bottom of your freezer. It's nice going to the ready meals. I mean, I'm not a ready meal person, but, you know, like going to M&S and picking out something really delicious, but also happens to be home cooked by you rather than pretending to be, and full of nutrition. And I think the way food looks and is presented is incredibly important. And I think it's easy to get quite lazy with home food, that you just sort of chuck it in the fridge with a bit of cling film over it or whatever. And then it's sort of somehow not so tempting. By the way, we'll put all the recipes in the podcast notes that I mentioned, but also the thing of tray bakes and one pot things. I mean, maybe you could talk a little bit about your tray bake salads.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, quite a few things there. So it's definitely not chefy because I'm not a chef and I don't have any formal training with cooking. My sort of interest in cooking developed once I'd learned about nutrition and I realized, you know, I'm going to have to actually get in the kitchen if I want to practice what I've learned. And so I was very much self-taught. In the early days, I did have maybe what I would now consider a restrictive diet because I had all of these health issues. So I did cut out gluten and dairy and, you know, reduce processed foods. And so I would look at recipes and just think, how can I add to them? How can I enhance them? How can I change them? But I'm someone that I'm not great with reading and following recipes. I don't have a lot of patience. I'm quite lazy. And I also just don't have a lot of time. And obviously my experience has all been fed with all of the clients that I've worked with as well. And the majority of clients that I work with have the same issues, that we're time poor nowadays. We might want to have these delicious chefy meals, but actually in reality, if we don't have sous chefs and a whole team in our kitchens, the amount of prep and washing up, et cetera, makes it unrealistic to be doing three times a day or several times a week. So that book, Simply Good For You, which is my fourth book, it actually came about after I'd become a mother and I suddenly wasn't this single girl who had all of this time to cook all of the time. And for the first few months, I just went back to my 20-year-old self and was just eating toast and, of course, feeling rubbish. Tummy aches came back, low energy. Of course, I was up all through the night. And I just thought, oh my God, how am I going to do this? I've got to get some nourishment back into me if I'm going to get through this phase. And that was really how that book came about. It was the quickest ways. What can I add to that toast to give me that nourishment going back to the pyramid? What do I need? How can I get it in? So those recipes genuinely were written when I was a new mother and tested on my toddler as I was weaning her. And they really are all about simplicity. But as you say, you know, it's also helping. It's not just for people with kids. It's just for anyone that's busy. But going back to you originally said how, you know, I'm passionate about vegetables. And a few years ago, I was lucky enough to move home to a place that had a lovely old walled kitchen garden. And that was the first time that I became connected to seasonal foods. It was, you know, having an asparagus patch and realizing that asparagus season was only for those 6 weeks and starting to grow the beetroot and just, you know, I very quickly became passionate about seasonal eating and growing my own vegetables and understanding that you only have a short window of this and that, yeah, courgettes, you can have those for a good 4 months, etc. And so now a lot of my recipes are influenced by the seasons. And I try to encourage people to take a recipe and change the vegetables according to what's in season. And by doing so, my way of sort of teaching that was in simply, I did four different tray bakes with the different vegetables that we have available in season. And they're sort of, I put the dressing on before you roast them. And to me, it's just a really, you know, probably twice a week, I'll just do a huge big tray bake. And if you have that in the fridge, and if you know how to pimp that up with an amazing dressing and add in some lovely fresh salad and lettuce leaves and some fresh herbs and some crunchy nuts and seeds, boom, you've got a really delicious and nutritious meal that doesn't have to, you know, take hours and hours to cook.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to do them. And sadly, beginning to run out of time, but I can't bear not to talk about two other things that I found, again, so empathetic and sort of unjudgmental in both your books that I've looked at. But the cook before element, it is so sympathetic to people who are busy and who want to just, like, if they've got sort of a few hours on a Saturday morning to get stuff done. And so your coconut lemon chicken in Simply just sounds so good. And I'm definitely going to do that this weekend.
Oh, great. And,
I mean, I know you say you do it when you've got friends, but I'm actually going to do that and then just eat that for two or three days. Sort of.
Yeah.
So it just is wonderful. And also the need for comfort still sometimes in food. I'm not actually a very sweet person thing. So your gooey courgette brownies sound amazing for sweet, but I love the idea. And actually Arthur adores mushroom pasta. And when we're away on our away days, one of the things that Arthur likes more than anything, we have a friend who travels with us called Caroline, and she often cooks creamy mushroom pasta for Arthur. And I think next time we're off on a trip in the early autumn, I'm going to cook Arthur your creamy mushroom pasta sauce.
Oh, gosh.
I'm hoping that he won't recognize that it hasn't got lots of creme fraiche, etc.
I hope he doesn't reject it and hate it. But Sarah, because when I came to Purchill and had lunch with you and you demonstrated your wonderful salad, which just, you know, for me was very exciting, that because I'm working with clients, so many people think of a salad as sort of like limp lettuce and, you know, it's very associated with diet culture. And I always think the more the merrier. And I know that you just kept on adding more and more things. And so I know that someone like you will take my creamy mushroom pasta, but I know that you'll add loads more herbs and loads more flavor and loads more leaves and just sort of make it your own. And that to me is the way that recipes can be improved. And I love to hear that people, you know, have their own spins, you know, on any of my recipes.
Yeah, no, I feel that. Well, we better draw to a close, but it's too nifty in a way. But suddenly, as I was coming back on the bus last night, I love your name, because I think freer is exactly, really, I know this sounds like a cliche, but genuinely, I feel freer of my kind of sugar addictions, wanting chocolate after a meal, and also wanting to drink that extra glass of wine. I actually feel freer of that. So I think you're very well named. And I think you followed, you know, I should be an ornithologist with my name, but you should definitely be a nutritional therapist with your name.
Well, very lucky. Thank you so much for having me on your wonderful podcast. And I'm so thrilled. It's always an honor when anyone, you know, reads my books and certainly cooks from them. But someone like you who already does all of your own cookbooks, it's a real honor for me to know that you're going to be cooking from them as well. Thank you.
I really will. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Grow Cookie to Range. Next week, Arthur's back with me and we're going to talk about entertaining in the garden, kind of like having parties, whether small or large, and also just simple flowers that you can put on the table outside or perhaps a growing container. So see you next week.
You can find more information, photos, and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes that we talk about in this podcast by heading to the links in the show notes or on our website at sarahaven.com.